Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Friday edition of Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As promised, a weekly guest now. A day late, a dollar short, but as promised, David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal. Dave, what's going on, man?
Hey, man. Not much. How are you?
I'm good. I didn't want to ask you to do this show late last night. You were at the game there. You had an early flight coming back today. I also had to end up driving to Starkville and back just today for work. So as we record this Thursday night. So it all worked out. But again, so a little late on the Thursday edition of the show, but Friday edition with you. I want to just start right off the bat with the game, obviously, last night, season opener. Grizzlies lose 101-120 to the Miami Heat. Man, I think we were all pretty excited through three quarters, and then the fourth quarter happened, and we got reminded that this was a growing team with a lot of young players. And I've said it on this show this week a couple times. I've said it on the show last week a couple times that learning how to win is hard. Learning how to win is a real thing in the NBA, and it's something that we'll probably say all year long with you and with everybody else. But general thoughts on the game, team, players last night?
Yeah, a lot of good, a lot of bad. And one thing that, having rewatched the game after I got back today, that I didn't realize or that really came through, I guess, was that, I don't know, maybe it didn't come through so much on the broadcast, but that arena was really loud. Like, I've now been to most of the NBA arenas, and American Airlines Arena was right up there in terms of the loudest. Now, that was the first time I'd been to a season opener on the road. So, I mean, that may have had something to do with it. Even though Jimmy Butler wasn't playing, like, there was definitely some buzz in the arena. And I think that had an impact. I think the noise, the energy from the crowd, if it came through on TV or not, I don't know. It's hard to say. But having been there, it was definitely a factor, I think, in the game, especially in that fourth quarter. When sort of the intensity started to ratchet up, and so the Grizzlies wilted a little bit, but that's okay. You know, they're young. What did you expect on the road in a hostile environment? You know, from the first game, I don't think there was anything particularly alarming from the game, except for maybe the 5-for-32 3-point clip. That's probably the thing that stood out to me the most as pretty icky for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, the crowd, you know, the crowd came through pretty good in the fourth quarter on TV. I think I've actually been to that arena as well for a playoff game in Miami, and it is really, you're right, it's a very loud arena. But yeah, the first three quarters would seem pretty dead, and it didn't look like there was a lot of people there, to be honest with you. Like, it did not look like it was filled at all. But I think the crowd came through late in that fourth quarter when they were really getting on it. The 5-for-32 doesn't concern me. It really doesn't. Like, opening night, a lot of young players. I think you can throw it away. I'll be honest with you. I think you can probably throw it away and forget about it. A lot of tight players on the season opener on the road. I think that will settle in. Now, you have the same stat line next week. I think you do start to, you know, look at that. And the other part of that is, like, they don't have a whole lot of, like, super great perimeter shooters. I mean, Goodrich is Marcos is technically a really good 3-point shooter. But, like, beyond that, like, there's not a whole lot of, like, super, super high caliber 3-point shooters. So, like, you know, I don't think they're going to be fit. They're going to shoot 15% from 3-point line every night. But I don't think also they're going to, you know, just stroke it from 45 either. So I don't think that's alarming off the bat, but I think next week it might be. Let's talk about the good. Tyus Jones, I thought, looked phenomenal last night. I mean, for years, Mike Conley has been asking for a competent backup point guard, and he leaves and they got one. So kudos to Mike Conley. What do you think of Tyus Jones? I thought he was the lone one of the lone bright spots for this team.
Yeah, 15-7 for Tyus Jones. He, Brandon Clark, and Marco Guterich, of all people, had the only positive plus minuses from the game, and so they were better with him with Tyus Jones on the floor. Actually, if you look at it from plus minus, now of course this is very much skewed by what happened in the fourth quarter, but John Morant actually had a negative 29, which was the lowest of anybody on the Grizzlies, and Tyus Jones obviously was tied for first with plus six. So again, that doesn't shock me, and nothing. You know, I actually looked over at Amari. We were sitting next to each other at the game. Tyus Jones had, I think he had two turnovers in the game, and he made one of those turnovers, and I was like, oh well, that Tyus Jones is like one turnover for the season. Like we just saw it right there. Like you know, like take a snapshot in your brain, because that's not going to happen very often. And looking at the box score now, he had seven assists, and two turnovers. So I mean, that is Tyus Jones in a nutshell, and that's why it would be so nice for Taylor Jenkins if he could find a way to get Tyus Jones and John Morant on the floor together. It didn't work in the brief time that he tried it in the preseason, but if there's matchups where they can try it this season, I definitely would be interested to see what that looks like, because you could really kind of let Ja play off the ball a little bit, take a little bit of the pressure off of him, and let Tyus facilitate. And I think that could be exciting for the Grizzlies offensively. They would just need to find a way to make it work defensively.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about Tyus Jones and John Morant together. I do want to pick your brain on that a little bit, on how that might look. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal. Welcome back to the show. Talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal. Beat writer was at the game last night, which would be two nights ago now when you're listening to this. But was at the game there. I mentioned before we got went to the break. Tyus Jones and John Morant. I don't know. I think I said in the preseason before we really got to this point on this show that I thought that I didn't know how it would work. I was very concerned that who is the offensive playmaker there to take the pressure off the other one? I mean, did they just collapse upon or really sag off both of them? You know, what really keeps that defense honest if they're both on the floor together? And I think that starts with Ja Morant's ability to get in the paint. Like, I think if he can get in the paint, and then that might go with what you're saying, if he could play off the ball, because he did that last night. There was several plays in the first quarter where he ran off screens, a couple back screens to get open for a under the basket layup. So is that the best course for those together, or is there something different that you see?
Yeah, I mean, John's going to have to prove that he can shoot the three ball effectively for that to work, and for just in general in life. Like, that's going to be something that he's got to continue to develop. He hasn't, to this point, very, very early, when you include the preseason, hasn't really shown the ability to shoot the three.
Right.
So that would be a key to making he and Tyus Jones work on the floor together. But, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, that play in the first quarter where Ja cuts back door off of the Jay and gets that Jay Crowder lob and finishes the alley-oop layup, just beautiful, and it just shows you his IQ, his quickness, his leaping ability all in one. And it, to me, that's exciting. I mean, kudos to Jay Crowder for recognizing it and throwing the lob. But to me, having Ja Morant run around without the ball is kind of exciting. You know, I was just watching the Hawks play, and Trae Young was off the ball a lot, and they went over to Detroit. He just went off because, you know, they had Evan Turner out there to get him the ball. Now, the difference between Evan Turner and Tyus Jones is pretty obvious, size difference. So, you know, Evan Turner is going to be more versatile defensively. You can assign him to, you know, probably the 1-4 against most teams defensively.
Right.
But you can't do that with Tyus Jones or John Morant. So it's intriguing offensively. It backfired the little bit of time that Taylor Jenkins did it against one of the international teams in the preseason. But it's also why D'Anthony Melton could be interesting too, because you're talking about a guy who can handle the ball there, who is healthier a little bit earlier than anticipated, who could come in and maybe play with Ja or with Ty, kind of give them that look. And then Melton is a guy who they think can guard multiple positions defensively, so he could sort of mitigate the defensive disadvantage of having two point guards on the floor with his defense, and maybe without having seen Melton really at all, you know, maybe that could be a combination that sort of gives the Grizzlies that look.
Yeah, I think that Ja Morant's best offense right now is, like you mentioned, coming off screens, off ball, or in transition. That is his 100% best offensive game right now. I think that Taylor Jenkins has got to find a way, like you mentioned, to get him more active, like, you know, more shots like that. I mean, I don't think that he's going to have to learn how to be a point guard. Like, there's no way around it. He's got to learn how to run offense, got to learn how to shoot the three point ball. Like, that's just something that point guards in this league have to do. But for now, in the short term, I think it would go a long way to find more opportunities for Ja Morant that look like that. You know, they do a good job of getting out in transition. Like, Ja Morant's pretty much a one man fast break at times. Like, he's so quick. So yeah, they do a good job there, but I think they're going to have to be able to find more spots off ball like that for Ja, like you mentioned. Maybe that is with Tyus Jones. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm curious to see what it could be. It obviously didn't work early, but they still got a long way to go. Let's talk about some of the bad things. There's a lot to choose from here. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Jonas Valanciunas. It's worth noting that he looked labored last night.
It did look like, and I also think he was limping a little bit too. I noticed that. Yeah. And I talked to him after the game. Now, I wasn't like, we didn't like have our recorders out, but like me and Omari were just kind of like talking to him as he was sitting there with his feet in the ice bath. And he said, look, like, the only run I'd had before tonight was like 8 minutes in practice the other day, you know? So he was not concerned about it. He wasn't in a great mood because he knew he didn't play well. He knew Derrick Jones Jr. put him on a poster. He kind of joked about that a little bit. He said he knew it was going to take time. And you know, it's almost like we tried to sort of soften the sort of time it would take for him to get back in the mix. Because, oh, well, he played in FIBA, and, like, he was active for the national team over the offseason. So, yeah, he should be able to jump back in without any problem. That's not really – I don't think that's really fair. This is a totally new system with a ton of new players, and he ran for 8 minutes. You know, that's what he told us. So, but before this happened and last night, and he said he wasn't able to do much with his lower body while they were going through this sort of precautionary phase with his foot. So just like his lift, just wasn't quite there. The sort of lower body explosion wasn't quite there for him, but he seemed to think that he's going to be fine. You know, he was kind of joking about getting put on a poster by Derrick Jones Jr. And, but yeah, it wasn't pretty, by any means for Jonas. I don't think I'm concerned long-term yet though.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I think it's sort of like the 5 for 32. That's kind of a throwaway for me. You know, he just looked labored. You know, he some bad fouls. The rest are awful. Like they were really, really bad on both sides. There's a ton of fouls that were called in this game. It just really, really weird and strange ones. So like, even the fouls early in the first half, the way it was called, you know, made a little more sense.
A lot of travels too.
A lot of offensive fouls. Like it seems like it always happens at this point every year. They have like a mandate from the league of what they're going to focus on. Yeah, you see a lot of that.
It's
in
so
the first
odd that like I we're watching the opening night games the night before, like the LA Clippers and LA Lakers.
It did not seem like that at all.
Yeah, exactly. Like in the even the Toronto New Orleans game, where like I expected New Orleans, you know, to look a little bit herky jerky with everything that's so new there. But like those games looked fairly like clean. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it was the quality of it. I do think it was somewhat the officials who kept that game, the Grizzlies game, from having any sort of rhythm at Miami.
Yeah, it's weird. But like I said, it happens every first part of every year. Like there's always something that they focus on. And so it'll go away. It'll go away in a couple of weeks. There's been a lot of offensive fouls called, period, like in all the games that were on Wednesday night. So just strange. But again, I'm not reading into too much of Jonas Valanciunas. I thought it was worth noting and strange that Bruno Caboclo didn't play as much run as he got in the preseason and looks as he got there. To come out and really do nothing in this game, it struck me as odd. I don't know if you thought the same or if you were expecting that or what.
I will proudly raise my hand and say that when I predicted my 10-man rotation on 92.9 before the game that I had Bruno Caboclo on the bench. So, him and Solomon Hill kind of seem to be the odd men out for now. Kyle Anderson wasn't spectacular, I mean, the other night, so he helped him on the boards a little bit. But, you know, I think there's going to be room for Bruno to stake out a spot. But I don't know, where did you fall on Bruno's performance in the preseason? Because, personally, I was not blown away by what he did in the preseason.
I wasn't blown away either, but he was playing at the five a lot of times, and he's just – and he's not – I don't think that's his – he's not – that's not what he is. Like, I think they were trying to squeeze him to a position where he's just not fitting. You know, like, I don't think he really – he definitely can't play the five in any situation in the NBA, period, end of story. And they were trying to do that. And I thought it was preseason just trying that, and that just – you can't do that, which – but it was very mediocre, you know, like – it was just meh. I really like it. You could, it's a lot of those player, a lot of those times you could, like, if someone mentioned something about Bruno, you'd be like, oh, he played? Like, I didn't even realize. Like, he wasn't good. Wasn't terrible. Wasn't great. Just was kind of out on the court roaming around. And you were like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. Like, whatever. It struck me as odd that he didn't, as much run as he got the preseason, didn't get any run there. But I did notice the one thing I said on this show about, you know, the big man rotation, they're going to have to find a solid rotation because Kyle Anderson and Brandon Clark out there together as bigs, I don't think that's going to work. Like, I don't know if that can be a long-term solution there. Nothing here is obviously a long-term solution with this team, but like that looked pretty bad. But I just assumed that Bruno would get more run because there's just not a lot of bigs to go around.
There are not. That's why back before the season, you know, I was saying, I think Miles Plumlee's got a shot to make the roster. I mean,
that's
I really
exactly
did.
Why I said I thought he was gonna make the roster, simply to have a body. That's it.
Yeah, but he didn't, and they are where they are. So, I mean, it kind of shows you the level of commitment that they have to playing a specific style. I'm curious to know as the season goes on if they'll waver in that commitment, not in a Taylor Jenkins goes rogue sort of way, but will the coaching staff and the front office sort of slide the pace and space, let it fly meter down a little bit as they start to realize that Jaren and Jonas are sort of their best scoring options, to be quite honest. I mean, if John Morant's not running the break, your best option is getting the ball to those guys somewhere near the low block. I mean, I don't foresee that changing. I really don't. Show me who else on this roster is going to create off the dribble or be a knockdown, you know, corner three-point shooter. I mean, I just don't see it. So, 5 for 32 from three-point range last night. You saw it a little bit. I mean, Valanciunas only played 16 minutes, but, you know, he took 7 shots. I think most of them were at the rim. I guess maybe a 1 or 2 three-pointers. Jaren was – it seemed like he was operating more near the block, near the post than he had been in preseason. So, and at some point, you know, is there a guy on this roster who after trades start happening or what have you, is there a roster spot that's going to come open to where they end up going out and getting a Joakim Noah type who can just be a body? You know, that's something that I'm going to be on the lookout for. I don't know what that spot is. You know, last year that was Andrew Harrison being waived a couple of weeks into the season. I don't really think they've got that obvious sort of wave candidate this year, unless it's Bruno, whose contract is not fully guaranteed for another couple of months. So maybe he's that guy. Maybe he's got to prove something more still. Maybe him making the 15-man roster was not a final declaration of his spot, because I think you and I are kind of onto something here where they're short on bodies, and maybe Miles Plumlee didn't deserve to be that guy. He didn't show anything in preseason that indicated he did. But at some point this season, just with the attrition of bodies that occurs in an NBA grind, like, they're going to need another guy in there to bruise a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're gonna have to figure it out. They cannot run out Kyle Anderson as a 4 and Brandon Clark as a 5 on a consistent basis. I just don't think, and not that I know if it matters so much in terms of wins and losses. But like you mentioned, I just don't know if you can do it in terms of health and just in terms of longevity for the players, especially someone like Brandon Clark, who's never played this amount of games ever and never been with this amount of big bodies banging down low ever. And so
it's just an unnecessary injury risk, yes. Physical toll, and sort of the moral, like the demoralizing element of kind of getting your head beat in every night.
And that's not who Brendan Clark is either. Like that's not his position ever in the NBA, ever.
Right. Yeah, I know. I mean, like, I guess in some dream world, like, he plays a stretch five for you or something, but, like, I mean, no, yeah, he's going to be a guy that helps him a lot on the boards, a guy that, he's going to be who he is, like, already. Like, he's going to be who he was last night. He steps out and hits that three-pointer. He goes in, gets some rebounds. He's just, that's who he is now is who he's going to be. And he's going to get better, but he's not a guy that strikes me as, like, oh, well, he really needs to bulk up, or, like, oh, like, not going to get any longer. Like, sorry, it's not going to happen. Like, he's not going to grow. He's 23. So, who Brendan Clark is right now is a lot of pretty much like who he's going to be. And he's going to get better. He's going to grow as a player and get more comfortable at the NBA game. But, I mean, yeah, at this point, like, of their young core, like, Darren and Ja are the two that need to develop and add a lot of things to the game. Brendan Clark needs to get comfortable shooting three-pointers and just keep adjusting to life in the NBA. But I don't have a long to-do list for him in terms of like taking that next step.
I have a pretty long belief is that you really can't change NBA players. Like, you can't make them be different from what they already are. Like, a lot of times you see people try to change shots or try to change something about I've always had a long time belief. People aren't just going to wake up and be different and just not, it just doesn't work like that. And so I think you're right there. You know, Brendan Clark 1-for-1 last night from 3-point corner three. So he's on his way. Let's take one more quick break. We'll come back. We'll have a short segment. We get long in that middle segment. We'll come back and do a quick wrap up, talk with David Cobb a little bit more, one more time. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of this Friday edition. The Grizzlies take on the Chicago Bulls tonight in their home opener. So if you're not doing it tonight, get down there. Look out for David and I. We'll both be there enjoying this. Hopefully maybe a win. We'll see. I don't have their first women come, I think, to like a week and a half from now. So hopefully it doesn't win. We'll see. But I want to wrap up with you on this Grizzlies roster from the other night. I feel like we continually have to talk about this, but it is what it is. Andre Iguodala tweeted, what did he tweet? Like, can I live or something? First of all, I'll say this, is I don't understand why people continually are bashing this dude for not wanting to be in Memphis, because guess what? He's not here at all. He's in LA. So he's never set foot in the city. B, who cares? Like, I probably wouldn't want to be here either. If someone forced you to be somewhere that you didn't want to be, why get mad and never tell them you want to be here? Whatever. I digress. People.
Yeah. It's a situation where you commend Jake Crowder for his embrace of the veteran role, even though we all know he's probably going to get traded.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily a situation where you have to condemn the guy for not embracing it either. You know, like, if Andre Iguodala wanted to be here and help mentor Ja Morant, great. But, like, I mean, why does it matter that he doesn't?
It's the Memphis. And this is the one thing that bugs me about Memphis or Memphians is that they always feel like people are trying to take shots at them, even when they're probably not. It's always a defense mechanism. And I always tell people the same thing. Like, who cares? Like, you know, enjoy the city, embrace it and love it because it's great. Not everybody wants to take shots at you all the time. So guess what? Not everybody wants to live here either. And that's okay. It's okay if people don't want to be here because it's a great city. And we know that. And if they don't want to live here, then so be it. It doesn't matter. But nonetheless, where do you think Andre Iguodala fits in the long term as far as trade-wise for this team? Is it – obviously, I think they'll probably still wait to December where they probably have more candidates. But
right. Where
do you think that fits for them?
Yeah, it's funny that we were kind of talking about this a little bit before the show because I think that – Andre Iguodala represents their earliest and perhaps their best chance to pair a wing with this young core. The reality is we won't know likely until the night of the draft lottery in the spring whether or not the Grizzlies are even going to have a first-round draft pick in the upcoming draft. Now, we also know that this free agency class isn't that great either, and even if it was great, the Grizzlies don't have a tremendous track record in the free agent market. So can they get a decent shooting guard who's maybe still on a rookie contract and then Andre Iguodala trade. Now, obviously, the salary there is huge. Take a lot of bad money, likely money that exists out for a couple of more years to make the salaries work. But the Grizzlies are in position to do that. Is there a team out there who that works with? Is there a team out there who's desperate enough to add a championship, you know, caliber piece to their roster, and they would be willing to give up a young wing? If so, I mean, I think that would be a tremendous haul for the Grizzlies. And maybe that's a little bit of a dream scenario, but if you think about it from the perspective of the other team, okay, what are we getting here? We're getting a former NBA Finals MVP who isn't young, but he's going to be well rested when he comes in here. As you mentioned earlier, a guy who's proven he can shut down guys like Kawhi Leonard, or at least guard them as effectively as anybody else. And then, okay, yeah, we have to part ways with this young shooting guard and see him go to Memphis. But we also get to get rid of some bad salary. We get to send off this bad salary to Memphis, and that's going to help us, since we're a big market team, have more money to throw at a free agent in the summer of 2021. Anyway, you know, so maybe there's a big market team that can sort of take that approach to it and send the Grizzlies a young talent. Because if the Grizzlies don't get it done with Iguodala, like I mentioned, there's no guarantee that they'll even have a draft pick this year. And with this free agent class being as bad as it is, the Grizzlies might be wise to – they are wise to be trying to extract everything they can from Iggy right now.
Absolutely. I mean, like I told you before we started, like if the Grizzlies – the Grizzlies should be looking to get a player for Iguodala, not a draft pick. Like if you're on the fence of what Iguodala could bring for this Grizzlies team and you say, oh, well, give us a first round pick and you can have him, LA. No, you shouldn't say that. You should go and try to find the best wing you can find for Andre Iguodala. The best chance the Grizzlies will have at retaining a young restricted free agent is by a trade. No free agent is going to come here for no reason. They're going to come here for money and money only. And if you have their bird rights, you can pay them any more than anybody else can. And
that's right. And if you've got a young player who's already proven something, that's a way more of a sure bet than a draft pick. I mean, draft picks are so hit or miss. I mean, you know, there are any number of possible outcomes. You know, the Grizzlies could get a first-round draft pick for Iguodala. That would be a good outcome, too. I mean, they would deserve praise for that. I mean, that would be an amazing haul for simply just raising their hands and being in position to have the space to take Iguodala's contract on in the first place. But if you can get a guy who's actually proven something on the floor, like, that's better than a draft pick, in my opinion, in most cases.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Unless it's like a very, very high draft pick, a player who's actually shown something is more valuable. That would, to me, would be the best-case scenario, and it's a situation where they're not going to have a ton of opportunities because of those things I outlined earlier. So, if they could get something along those lines for Iggy, huge win.
If you told me you can have, Mark, you can have the first round pick next year, the first pick in the draft next year, or you can have Buddy Hield or Malik Beasley or whomever, whatever restricted free agent that is a clear cut NBA player and can score the basketball, I'll take them over the first round. You told me you can have the first pick, Mark, take anybody you want. I don't care. I don't want it. I'll take the guy. I'll take the player. Every day, every year, no matter what. It's so hit or miss. Even at the first pick, it's just you never know what you're going to get in the NBA. The NBA from college is such a different game. It is so different from what they do in college that it's just so hit or miss. You see guys all the time who were just decent college players ended up being stars in the league. Like, it's so hit or miss. And if they could find a way to go out and get a decent player, not even like a top restricted free agent, have a decent wing, I would call that a win. And I think the ultimate scenario here, the ultimate test is, what is Andre Iguodala going to, what is he worth? And that's what it really boils down to is what is he worth to a team that A, has to be probably in it to really want to make that deal, to give up some young piece, to know that Andre Iguodala is going to put him over the edge. And then two, trying to get salaries and take on salaries and match that as well. That's a whole another part of it as well that people don't like to talk about it, but it's just the real scenario in the NBA that stuff has to work. And so I think there's a lot of variables there, but they absolutely should be out there shopping Andre Iguodala for a player and not a pick. And I think we both agree. Anything else before you got out of here, David? What else are you working on? Or what's up right now that everybody can read at the commercial appeal?
Yeah, hopefully by the time your pod listeners are listening, I'll have this Iguodala thing completely hammered out. Talking through with you smoked and so instead you're watching the Clippers and the Warriors now. Hopefully we'll get this done pretty soon. But yeah, we have some coverage up from the trip to Miami for subscribers. I did a big dive in Zach Kleiman's background, and that seems to have been well received. So those would be my recommendations for now. But yeah, I appreciate it, man. Well, I'll see you at the game Friday night.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be there. I'll see you there. I'm excited to get to try out the drink machine on Friday night because I have
Strawberry Mountain Dew.
Strawberry Mountain Dew is absolute trash. We're not getting into that. We're already out of town. But man, I appreciate you coming on. You can come on and shop and workshop any ideas you have on the show all the time. As we mentioned before, David will be joining us. We'll try to stick to every Thursday, but if there's games late at night, so might push it Friday. But every week, David will be on giving us insight. He's around the team a lot more than I am. I'm around the team a lot, but he's there at every single practice talking to all players every single day. So him and Amari will have every single week throughout the NBA season. David, I appreciate it. I'll see you Friday.
Okay, man. Sounds good.